You're listening to The Songwriter's Diary. On today's episode, I have a very, very special guest, formerly known as Unchained XL. Mazwell Q is a Tamaki Makaurau-based Nigerian Kiwi rapper, singer, songwriter, producer, and multi-instrumentalist. Thank you so much for being here today.
What's good? What's good?
Please, in your own words, tell us what you do and how you do it.
I am, an artist and producer. I do predominantly hip hop, a bit of alternative stuff in there, influenced by a wide range of things. And I self-record and self-produce. I've got my studio at my place, and I was brought up as an instrumentalist, and I got into production and hip hop a bit later on. So it's in my nature to sort of do the whole package myself.
Great. If you could tell us where your music journey began. Obviously, you're of Nigerian descent. Did you grow up in Nigeria or did you grow up in New Zealand?
I grew up in New Zealand, but was born in the UK. So my parents did their postgraduate studies in the UK and had me and my sister. And then they moved to Aotearoa when I was just a baby. And so, this country's all I've known. My music journey started at the age of 4 when my parents pushed me into classical piano lessons, which I took until the age of 11. At which point I dropped that and got into drums and I got into a bunch of other instruments throughout school. And then I was sort of, I was actually a rock and metal kid all throughout school. I wasn't actually too into hip hop back then. The environment.
Yeah, because you were in a heavy metal band, weren't you?
That's right. Yeah, I was in a few. The environment I grew up with was quite white. And most of my friends were of European descent, and that's just what the game was. It was rock, metal, and punk, and I fell in love with that kind of music. It allowed me to sort of express my instrumentalism with as much energy and vigor as I could and learn a bunch of new ways of doing music. And it was only in uni where I sort of made the transition more toward hip-hop. I kind of had been listening to hip-hop the whole time on the side, but it wasn't my first love until a bit later on. And by that time, I'd learned keys, guitar, bass. I learned a bit about composition and arrangement, and I deep dove into the production game.
So did you also study music in uni?
No, I actually studied computer systems engineering to make the parents happy, because as you know, as African kids, music isn't really squarely an option on the table. So I thought I would sort of escape the drama and just do what made them happy for a bit, get my quote-unquote meal ticket. Then later on, dip out of engineering and get into the music.
I'm sure the engineering experience and is it IT?
Yeah, I guess so. I was in software engineering and software testing. There's a little bit of crossover, especially because the company I worked at was Serato, and they're an audio research company. So that was pretty cool off the bat. I was able to sort of get my foot into the audio world through there. It still wasn't my what I wanted to be doing. So,
and at what point or at what stage in your life did you decide that, okay, I wanted to take music seriously?
You know, it's really hard to pinpoint, because when I was in my middle band, which was around 2009 up until 2014, I was still doing uni, I was still working. So that stuff was on the side. But I always had in my mind that, you know, if this thing took off, I would absolutely forego everything else and do this. But it never took off how I wanted it to. So when the middle band finished and I decided I wanted to do my own project, and that happened to be a hip hop one, again, I was doing it on the side, on the peripheries, and always had in my mind, you know, if something were to blow up, of course I'd leave my work and pursue it. But it got to the point where I realized the only way this thing is going to blow up is if I put in enough mahi to get it there. And it, for me, just doing it on the peripheries of my day was not going to be enough. So I had to get to the point where I took the risk and jumped out of my full-time job, sacrificed all that lovely pay every month.
lovely money.
You know what I'm saying? that lovely cushion. Then just went into the danger zone of self-employment and self-sufficiency. I haven't looked back ever since. It's been an awesome journey, and I'm thankful that I did that.
For a lot of artists, their dream is to one day leave their day job and function as a working artist, and which is what you're doing. And it's so nice seeing that on the sideline.
Yeah.
Very inspiring for a lot of us.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm just really thankful that throughout my music journey, I was able to pick up a lot of skills, which have helped me on this freelance journey. I actually refer to myself less as a artist and producer when people ask me about my career and say I'm a freelancer. Of course, my artist and production is a central part of that. But the reality is I do a lot of things to make ends meet. I also do mentoring in high school in conjunction with the New Zealand Music Commission. I also do a bunch of session vocals for artists and for studio groups. I do voiceovers, commercial voiceovers, and I also, do engineering for other people as well. So there's a few things that sort of together help me do what I do. And I think if I was to just try and be an artist, just try and do MazBoQ, it wouldn't be sustainable.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I've actually heard you on a few ads, actually. I think a Burger King ad.
Yep. Yeah, I'm on that. My voice is on that.
Is it MyFM? Are you on MyFM?
I might have been advertising something on MyFM. I've got a few commercial voiceover jobs that are out there. I used to do quite a lot for Spotify, but also I do some visual stuff as well. So I was on the Orcon internet ad recently.
Oh yeah.
I'm on one for Chubb Insurance in the States.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that side of things as well that I'm into. I've got my fingers in a whole bunch of pies.
How did you get into doing things like voiceovers or for commercials and also freelancing with different audio-based companies?
Yeah, so the voiceover thing's interesting. A lot of people have asked me that question. I'm trying to remember how I fell into that world. I think I just had someone comment, you would be a great voiceover actor or commercial voice if you wanted to. And I thought I'd have a look into it. And I think I just found an agent and sent them an email. And they asked for a demo. And again, having the benefit of having a studio at my house, I was able to record a high quality demo that represented my voice quite well. And they thought, you know, that was great. So, yeah, I got on their books. And then from there, I just started getting some jobs. And since then, I've switched agencies. But, you know, I've just been fairly consistent in being in that space, which is great.
And you do have a very nice, like, deep voice.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I've been told that I've got a radio voice.
Yes, you do have a radio voice. In regards to your artistry, are you able to tell us how that journey is going so far since leaving your day job and deciding to go hard?
Yeah, it's been a challenging one. I think the biggest or the most significant theme over the last few years, I mean, I left in 2017, I left my job, but I had been doing this on the side since 2015. The most significant theme has been one of self-discovery and sort of changing my artist image, if you will, in conjunction with that self-discovery. So in order to give this context, I have to go all the way back to my family sort of coming to New Zealand.
Yes, please.
We were, I think, around the third or fourth Nigerian family in Aotearoa. So back in the early 90s, the Nigerian community was tiny. The whole African community was tiny, let alone the Nigerian community.
Mm.
So it meant in terms of cultural identity and representation, there was very little for me to chase after and little for me to aspire to. So I had to build my own. And this was a huge challenge for someone who's young and just wanting to fit in. And it just so happened that being an African, I was not indigenous to Aotearoa. I wasn't part of the Pasifika group, which has a large representation here. And I obviously wasn't Pākehā. So for me, I was like, where do I fit in and who am I? And in order for me to feel like I belonged, I had to really, I thought I really had to suppress the African side of me. And I had to push down those things that made me unique. And so that fitted quite well with my journey into metal and my journey into rock, because in that community, everyone was white. And mm-hmm. as long as I was really, really deep in that community, I could sort of ignore my blackness and I could embrace something else that would make me fit in. And that was, looking back on that, that was like hugely problematic, but mm-hmm. it's kind of what I had to do to survive at the time. So,
it's like you had no choice because for a lot of us, we live within different cultures, you know, between our parents and our families back home. We don't have a blueprint, so we kind of just have to make it up along the way.
Exactly. And so as I got older and as I sort of realized that actually my Africanness, my blackness, my Nigerianness were things to be celebrated, I really went in full steam and embraced them and wanted to showcase them and also be a bit of a beacon, I guess, for younger people sort of growing up in the same culture as me who would experience the same things. So the start of my music career as Unchained XL, I was very, very visually African. Like I always wore the Ankara tops. In the music, my stuff was very, very heavily influenced by Fela Kuti. There was that really classic Afrobeat sound in there. A lot of the people I featured, you know, I made sure that they would rap in their indigenous African languages or sing in their languages. And so I was very much like, yo, I'm African, and I'll put it in your face because I wanted to be like loud and proud about it and inspire people. And I'm not saying that that's not something I do anymore, but at the start of my journey, when I was really asserting my identity, when I was coming out of this place of wanting to embrace whiteness and into this place of embracing blackness, that was what I needed to do. I needed to really assert my Africanness. And so my music reflected that. And as I became more solid and secure in who I was, I felt less and less the need to proclaim and shout at the mountaintops that, yo, I'm an African dude, you know, because... That's how it is. As you become more secure in something, you know, you don't have to be as loud about it. So I guess what happened as I progressed through my career is that I was like, I don't have to conform myself to just being like this artist that's flamboyantly African. You know, I can I can do other stuff. I can acknowledge the fact that my upbringing, my musical backdrop is quite a diverse one, and I've got a lot of musical interests. And maybe my music can start to reflect that. And maybe my image can start to reflect this kind of maturing of me. And so that was when Unchained XL became Masbo Q. And my music, although it still has some African influences in there, especially if you're really attuned to it and looking for it, it's not as heavy. You know what I'm saying? And my music starts to encompass a bit more of what I am. You can even start to hear a lot more of these rocky influences, especially now that I'm comfortable with the fact that just because I love rock music, it doesn't mean I'm whiter than you know, someone who doesn't, you know? Again, self-discovery and so on and so forth. So yeah, like my journey in music has very much reflected me coming to terms with my own identity.
And you could hear it as well. Like when I was listening to The Future Was, your album, you can hear elements of West African music. You can hear elements of rock and metal and even obviously hip hop.
Yeah.
And it's a nice blend. Like you can hear everything with the song. I think it's called Just Let It Go. I really, really loved how I think it was, is it Padiso?
Yeah.
He was rapping in
Swana.
Oh. Yeah. That was beautiful.
It was
perfect.
Yeah, he's great. He's done that before for me on another record. I always love him and my other friend Nonso, who's Igbo. I love having them do as much in you know, the languages as they can, because I think there's not enough. It's interesting, like, and this is a whole nother conversation. But I think like in the West, we've accepted certain languages as being accessible. For example, like Despacito was on the radio for a long time, which was majority Spanish. No one really blinked an eye because of that.
Nah.
But, you know, we put in some African language and then all of a sudden people are like, oh, it's not accessible. People don't understand. I'm like, how many people in New Zealand speak Spanish?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
not that many. So why are we okay with Spanish but not our, you know, indigenous African languages? So I thought, you know what? Nah, like in order to, you know, make that change, I just got to be part of doing it.
it works so well. Like, it works so perfectly. Like, I think the song starts off with the, I can't remember exactly, but it's like tick, 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 tick. And yeah, when he starts rapping, I can't say what he was saying, but just the rhythm of what he was saying worked very well with everything else that was going on in the song.
Yeah, you groove along with it still.
Yes, yeah.
The way that song came about is that there's a drummer called Miele Manzanza. I believe he's Congolese. He's the son of Sam Manzanza from Wellington, who's a Afrobeat Kiwi artist. And I was following him on Instagram, and he posted, I think he was like working on his new album or slowly releasing songs from his new album. He's a really accomplished jazz drummer. And he posted an Instagram post of, it was like a promo video of him playing along to one of his songs. And I heard the groove and I'm like, that's a really, really awesome, like old school kind of jazzy, boom bappy sounded a kind of thing. And I'm like, this is literally begging to be sampled. It has to be sampled. So I messaged Miele and I was like, bro, can you send me the song? Because I'd love to sample it. I didn't actually think he'd get back to me, but he did. And he's like, yeah, man, like here's a song, do whatever you want. And when you come up with the final product, we can discuss, you know, release things. And I'm like, okay, sweet. Let me do something. And so he sent me the track, and it was just the first 8 bars of the track that I took with just the drum solo bit, which is literally just a beat. And I looped that around, and it was actually a struggle from like that song didn't actually come too naturally. I just knew I wanted to make something with that beat. And I was just looping and looping and listening to it, I just had this just let it go come into my mind. I'm like, oh, that actually sounds like a real cool hook. What am I actually saying when I say just let it go? And I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? Something that I've always gotten into or fallen into is a trap of arguing with people who are never going to be convinced of something. And that's so, so relevant now about an issue that we don't have to speak about. But you know what I'm saying? Like just going toe-to-toe with people who you know are just wasting your time because they're so set in their ways. And it makes you angry, it makes you emotionally turbulent, and it really upsets your balance and your energy.
Core.
So at some point you need to recognize that and just let it go and know that it's not worth it. So I thought I'd write a song about that. I'd write a song encouraging people who are in these traps to just let it go. You know what I'm saying? Just let it go. It's not with the energy. And I thought that was a universal enough message and a message that fit in enough different contexts that I could bring in someone like Podiza who could come in from his own cultural perspective. I could bring in someone like Tyler Trench who could also, you know, speak from his experiences, and we could all talk about the subject.
Yeah. And as someone who also lives in Aotearoa and is of African descent, trying to figure out just who I am. When I listen to your music, you're telling our story, well, my story as well. Like, I don't know if I want to speak about this, but why not? Last year when the Black Lives Matter was trending, and I would say trending because it was. just like you're saying, just having conversations with people who, you know, no matter how loud you scream, like people who look like me, their lives matter just as much as everybody else.
Yep.
Having those conversations with people who don't see that is very disturbing and also very scary. And like you said, just let it go. Like sometimes you have to get yourself to a place where you're like, okay, this is who I am. This is what I believe in. I'll never see eye to eye with some people. I sometimes think, well, do I really need to spend my time and energy trying to force you to see me or trying to force you to see other people who look like me?
Yeah.
And so, just let it go. Just let it go.
It's honestly, it's releasing a burden from you because you have to realize that it's often just you carrying it. Like when you know, you're mad about something, you're frustrated about something. And I think subconsciously you think that by you being frustrated or by you being mad, you're really showing them, you know, like you're really showing them, but they don't care. They don't know that you're mad. You know,
they're going about their day, like
exactly, it does not even cross their mind, you know what I'm saying? So, by you being angry and mad about it, you know, it burdens you. And that's not to say that you shouldn't ever be angry about things. Mm. It's just to be aware of what that anger can do to you sometimes.
Yeah, you know? Just to protect yourself, eh?
Yes, definitely. Like, if your anger is not actionable, then you really need to assess whether it's worth caring.
You're quite public about what you think.
Some of the things.
Some of the things. How has that been perceived by some of your listeners, the media, and even just in your personal circle?
Yeah, so I think for the majority of people, it makes sense. You know, like, for me to be saying the things that I say in my music demands that also when these issues are in public, I have something to say about them as well, in order for me to be genuine and for me to have, you know, integrity. It makes sense that I talk about these things in my music and on normal stages and then on other kind of public stages as well. But obviously it invites criticism, like the usual stick to music kind of criticism, which is ironically very silly because a lot of the biggest political statements in pop culture are made by musicians throughout history. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
musicians have always been a beacon for political sort of change and challenging systems. But yeah, obviously a lot of people are uncomfortable with that. It's all good though, you know what I'm saying? And the thing that I'm realizing is if you really want to make strides in music, you have to step out and be willing to be criticized and be willing to have that hate. And that's something that I was uncomfortable with for a while and didn't really understand for a long time. I wanted to make sure as many people were as happy as possible. Despite the polarizing nature of my content, and I thought that that doesn't work. That's a huge dissonance. You know what? I'm gonna have to be hated at some point. You know, I remember, you know, one time I was on YouTube, searching up, you know, some of Kendrick's stuff, and because you know he's obviously one of my favorites, and I was reading the comments, and there are some people who just like vitriolically hate him. You know, think he's the worst thing ever. And I'm like, if someone like Kendrick can incur that much hate, why do I think that I can get away without it? You know what I'm saying? If someone at the top of his game, who like in the last sort of decade is somewhat of an icon for the whole genre, if he is hated by so many people, why do I think that I can make music? You know, little old me, why do I think that I can do this and escape it? So I'm like, no, and you know, I have to be willing to polarize in order to succeed.
Yeah. And I guess accepting that not everyone's going to like your music, and that's okay. Not everyone's going to like you as a person, no matter how good of a person you are. And that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I actually think unless you're, I heard someone say this the other day, I forgot the exact words, but it was along the lines of like, if you're not saying something that somebody is going to hate, you're never going to get any, you're not saying enough. And I had to really think about that, you know, because I was so used to sugarcoating my words and making everything as PC as possible so as to only be slightly suggestive, so only those who are really digging deep can understand the meaning.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what if that means that I'm actually missing a huge part of my potential audience because I'm just not saying it plainly enough and they're not actually hearing what needs to be said? You know, so yeah, you have to be willing to say some stuff. And it's by no coincidence that some of the biggest artists in the world or biggest public figures are the most polarizing ones. You know what I'm saying? Like Eminem is the prime example of that.
Yeah.
Simultaneously the most loved, the most hated rapper in history. So polarizing. You have to be hated, you have to be loved. It's all part of this package.
I think not even like in music, but just in
general.
In general, eh?
Yep.
I'm learning that I need to say what I want to say. I need to stop people pleasing.
Yeah.
Because it's something that, I don't know about you, but something I've grown up with. As an African child, you have to be respectful. You have to make sure you're not like causing any friction with people.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that sticks as you're growing up if you don't catch it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that, and you know, I'll be interested to see if there is like a pattern of people from our kind of backgrounds being more unwilling to step out and say these kind of things because of the way that we were conditioned in our households. You know, I think that's probably a very real phenomenon, you know, and even at our, even as we get into the, you know, late 20s, 30s, there's still this like complex that we have around authority and around, you know, challenging people, especially those who are older than us, you know, you know, it's hard.
It's like, you can't tell someone older than you that you're wrong.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that stays with us. You know? That stays with us.
Yeah. Can we talk about Best of You? Are you able to talk through what the process of making Best of You was?
Yeah. So I wanted a song on the album that was going to reach a little bit further into the commercial space. Mm. You know, usually when I compose my music, I don't have much thought for the spaces in which it's going to end up. I just, you know, write music because it's what I like. But as I go along this musical journey, and I know that, you know, in order to get somewhere, you do have to broaden your reach. Sometimes you do have to make these choices to sort of expand into certain spaces. And so I thought, yeah, like, let me make something that's going to reach a little bit more into the commercial space, tickle the ears of R&B listeners and people who are more into sort of the mainline thing. So I thought I'd do something that had a bit of a dancey vibe, not like a hardcore dance, but like just a flavorful kind of beat. And I sort of saw that a lot of the beat styles coming out of, you know, Africa and South America are trending at the moment. And sort of in my natural tendency to be a little bit different, instead of going for the usual ones that people go for, I thought I'd reach into the Kizomba space, which is quite big in Angola, I believe. It's like a slowed down reggaeton kind of vibe, in my mind anyway. That's how I listen to it. And I thought I'd compose a song based on that kind of beat. I wanted to, against my usual way of doing things, I wanted to strip back the production. So if you listen to Best of You compared to Don't Stop Regardless or Beat Up, Bullied and Dunked On, for example, like, those other two have lots and lots of layers. And if you were to bring up those sessions on Logic, you just see piles and piles and piles of tracks, because that's how I do things. Like, I add stuff. I, you know, being an instrumentalist, I love crazy arrangement. But for this track, I'm like, no, actually, I'm going to keep it simple. Drums, bass, like one melodic thing. And then that's basically it. And I'm going to let the vocals do the rest of the work. Because that seems to be a more formulaic approach to pop. So I thought I'd do that. And, the next phase was to determine what kind of song I wanted to write and how could I tell my own story in a way that's a lot more accessible and that broadly appeals to a lot of people. And I thought I'd reflect on my journey as coming up in Aotearoa as an African child and having to deal with a lot of the self-hatred and also think about what my journey is in dealing with that hatred and where am I going. And I thought, to me, I was like, I need to be the best of me, and the best of me is to embrace that. And that ties in with the video. And the video, at the end of the video, you see me sort of turn into this African superhero, and that kind of represents the fact that, yo, I've fully embraced who I am now, and that now, and because of me embracing that identity, I've got this power. You know, I've got this power that's beyond what I could have imagined. I've got this power and potential. That was kind of, that was the journey and the underlying theme of the song and the video.
And the concept of the music video, is that something you came up with, or did you collaborate with other people for that?
Yeah, so the person who directed it is a close friend of mine. Her name's Gail Hochman. She's a really, really amazing director. As soon as I got the funding, we'd been meaning to work together for a while. We just had to wait for the right project. I actually got funding for Goat Problems before that. And I told Gail, like, I don't know if this is our song, you know, like, I know the kind of stuff that you make. You make stuff that's really deep and really sort of emotive and really powerful. I just don't think Goat Problems is a song for us. Let's wait for something else. So when we got the funding for Best of You, I'm like, yep, this is the one. And I kind of just gave it to her, and she did a really cool treatment. She came up with the concept of, you know, us being, like, she knew I liked the superhero vibe. But she came up with this concept of me really trying to discover and unlock my power. And then by the end of the video, like, it's fully there and fully good. And it would happen with me, and then I have an interlocking story with the feature artist, who's C Blue. And she would have her own story of becoming the best of her, and she'd have her own powers. And then at the end, we'd kind of meet and kind of somewhat acknowledge each other, but leaving it ambiguous enough. So, you know, the watchers can keep guessing, but yeah, no, that was definitely credit to Gal for coming up with that.
It's a really nice song. When I'm listening to your music, I'm normally like running outside or I'm doing something that makes me feel like, okay, like I got this. I'm a bad bitch. Like that's the that's the mood I'm in when I'm listening to your music. But with Best of You, I find myself listening to it when I'm in the car or when I'm just chilling. It's a very easy listen.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Which is why I mentioned to you that I was in my feels. When I'm listening to your other tracks, it's more of a feeling of empowerment.
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas with this one, it was more, I don't know, my heart felt it more.
Yeah, it does speak to the heart of it more. That was definitely by design.
yeah. Are you able to talk a little bit about your songwriting process and what that looks like or sounds like for you?
Yeah, so as I say, like, I grew up playing instruments first, so I'm definitely a producer before I'm an artist when it comes to songwriting. I'll come up with the melodies and the beat, and then to a certain extent, I'll let the beat speak about me. There are some exceptional cases where I have a really strong thematic idea that I want to get down, but usually I'd create the music. The music comes first, and then the music will communicate what lyrically has to take place. So I might produce 70 to 80% of the instrumental, sit with it for a while, go for walks with it playing in my ears, or just listen to it on loop, and then just out loud jam out some ideas that make sense, some melodic, some lyrical ideas that kind of make sense. And then once something catches, I'll start recording straight away. I'll record whatever comes down, and I'll just refine from there. And then once I've got something that looks like a vocal part, I'll go back and I'll finish the beat up around the vocals, and then I'll go back and then I'll sort of finish the vocals, like I'll finalize the vocals. So it's a bit of a back and forth process. Synergistically, the lyrics and the beat sort of build each other up until they finish.
Because you're wearing so many different hats at the same time. Like you're a songwriter, you're the producer, and you're also the performer.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and the engineer.
And
it all ties in, you know what I'm saying? Like I don't just produce and then do the vocals and then engineer. Like all of them happen at the same time, like simultaneously, because I kind of feel like the demarcations are a little bit arbitrary at some point. And what I mean by that is, like, when I'm producing, for example, I'm coming up with synths, I'm coming up with beats, but at the same time, like, in order for the synth to really do what I want it to do, I need to engineer it right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I need to make sure it's got the right distortion, it's got the right level, it's got the right EQ or whatever. So I'm engineering at the same time that I'm producing. Mm-hmm. And then in order for my melodies to make sense, it needs to fit in this place where the synths aren't happening. Maybe I need to take the synths out. So I'm arranging and I'm composing the lyrics at the same time. You know, there's literally a place in my song, Don't Say Everybody Be King, where I literally, in the lyrics, I say, I come in where the horns don't blow. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like a fourth wall break that I'm doing there. I'm kind of saying that, yo, where I'm coming in, where I place my lyrics is where the horns of my track aren't really blowing. And it does have a sort of an under metaphorical meaning to that. But like, I'm also playing on the fact that, yeah, I'm producing and composing and writing lyrics at the same time. Like, that's a thing for me.
I just think more and more people should listen to your music, like, while they're,
please,
like, focused. Because you give so much advice in your music. You give so much wisdom. And if for someone who's listening but not really listening, it'll be really easy to miss that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think more people should listen to your music. And something that I really love that you've been doing is the tips and tricks that you've been sharing on TikTok.
Oh, yep.
That's been amazing. And like, obviously, a lot of people really appreciate it.
Yeah, that was a really crazy, crazy thing that I kind of fell into because I hadn't planned to do that. Mm-hmm. I had TikTok for a while and it just wasn't really working as much as I wanted it to. A lot of people had been telling me, you know, TikTok is the future. You need to get off Instagram. It's a dying platform. And I'm like, okay, let me try and do TikTok.
Yeah.
But the more I was on TikTok, the more I felt really out of touch. And all the videos that I was uploading, some of them were doing okay, but a lot of them weren't. So I almost gave up on the thing. But we got into lockdown and I'm like, okay, well, lockdown is focused or it eliminated a lot of the potential things I could be doing. I can't really go out there and perform. I can't have my clients over. So I guess it's me in the studio doing my thing. I can only make music and make content. What am I going to do? So I took this song that I'd been listening to for a little bit by this artist called Kirapuru, and I remixed it and I put my own verses on it. And I put that out on YouTube and I was like, how am I going to get this song out there? It's not like a official release that I'm putting on Spotify or anything like that. It's just on YouTube. How am I going to get any attention on that? And something came to my mind. I was like, you know what? Let me just give this TikTok thing a go again to see what I can do. And I thought, instead of just going on there and plugging the song, being like, yo, I've got a new song, listen to it. I was like, why don't I talk a little bit about my approach to how I wrote for that song? How do I rap on a song like this? And I thought it'd be cool to show people that when I rap on a beat of this nature, I kind of pull my vocals a little bit back and make sure that I'm sitting right back on the beat. So it feels like my vocals are a little bit delayed and it has that real 90s boom bap feel to it. And I demonstrated that versus what it would sound like if I just rapped normally on the grid. And I entitled the video called Don't Rap on Beat, Rap Behind Beat, as a little bit of a catchphrase, you know what I'm saying, to get people interested. And I put the video up on TikTok and it just absolutely went crazy. It went wild. I had no idea why, but it was just going wild. People were loving it. I think it's at around 2 million views at the moment. But it just climbed and climbed and climbed. And I went from 2,000 followers to about 65,000 in a week. You know what I'm saying? It was madness. And I thought, you know what, let me keep doing videos like this, you know, and it kind of evolved into this thing where I'm taking rhythmic concepts that I learned from my music education in high school and doing classical stuff. And let me apply that to rap. And it just so turns out that it seems to be a niche that no one has really done much in.
Yeah. You know, you can go on YouTube and you can, you know, type up how to play a certain guitar riff or how to play drums, how to play keyboard, how to vocal lessons, but you won't really find someone, you know, really showing you or telling you how to rap behind the beat, you know?
Or just how to rap in general is a hard one because rap has got two very strong elements to it. And I feel that the majority of the tips and tutorials that are out there focus on the linguistic side, you know, the lyrical side and the poetic side, which is valid. You know, that's such a huge part of rap. But there's not enough from the actual rhythmic side or the flow side, especially not in the context of rhythm theory. I think that's the thing that sets me apart because I'm showing how these things work and how they make sense in the context of music theory. And what it does is that it shows people, A, that a lot of the things that rappers do are actually quite complex. You know what I'm saying? Rhythmically and musically, they're complex things. And the second thing it does, it shows people that it's just as valid an art form as any other art form. You know what I'm saying? It has the same depth. It has the same, you know, intricacies to it. And it can be approached the same way if one was to just spend some time with it and really analyze it and pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah, it's just wild to me that people think that rap, hip-hop is not a valid...
Oh, listen, you know, a lot of people will say, look, it's just talking over a beat. And you'll be like, okay, if that's all it is, here's a beat and talk over it and see how you sound. You know what I'm saying? Like, more often than not, like, the people who say things like that sound absolutely terrible. And they're not even aware about how terrible they sound, which is crazy. And there's a reason why you can tell someone who hasn't rapped before, no matter how much natural talent they have. Mm-hmm. You can tell someone who's never rapped before versus someone who's a seasoned rapper. And all the differences are very, to the untrained ear, they're very subtle and very intricate. They're things that you would come away from listening to both and say, I don't know why the seasoned rapper sounded better, but he does. And I guess what I'm, or, but she does, you know, I guess what I'm doing with my lessons is I'm breaking down exactly why the seasoned rapper sounds better. I'm breaking down all those intricacies that you can't really describe in your head. Stuff like the tonal differences in voice, the rhythmic changes, the way you deliver certain words, the rhyme schemes used, you know, just subtle differences in placement over the beat. These things I'm kind of using my music theory background to identify and explain, and people are like, oh, right, okay. So there's actually a lot to this. Yeah, there's actually a lot to this. And I'm like, yeah, there really is.
Yeah, I think your classical background and just your background in all the genres that you've explored, I think you have an advantage because you're able to merge both of those worlds together, and also you're able to explain to people from those two worlds.
Yes. Yeah. So the reality is most people that come into rap don't do so from a musical background. They do it because they grew up listening to rap, which is fine. You don't have to come in from a musical background, but it does mean that a lot of the skills you pick up intuitively, and you don't know why certain things sound good, you just know that they do. And it's similar for rock, actually. A lot of people going into rock don't have musical backgrounds. They just listen to that music. But something like jazz, no one just ends up in jazz from a non-musical background.
You gotta study that shit.
Yeah. Like, or you've got to have an interest in music for music's sake. And then jazz is that thing that tickles you even further. Like, it's very rare that I see just someone random listening to jazz records and be like, oh, you know what? I want to be a sax player. I've got no musical background at all. I don't know how to read music. Let me go and play sax. I mean, no doubt it does happen, but it does not happen nearly to the same extent that a young kid will pick up a pen and be like, I want to be a rap, you know?
I don't think I've ever listened to a song of yours where, like, there's never a moment where, like, you sort of fade off where, like, there's no energy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can tell, you know when to come in, you know when to just let the beat ride out, you know when to, you're good.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Yeah. You shared a post on your Instagram a while ago. You were talking about if you were to notate a rap verse.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Remind me what you said. I can't
exactly. So I said if you were to take something like an Eminem or a Busta or a Twista verse, and you were to notate it using traditional music notation, it would look just as complex as some kind of hardcore snare drum piece, like an orchestra or a jazz snare drum piece, you know, in terms of the fact that you're using quite intense rhythms and all the different complex rhythmic devices and rhythmic techniques that you see in jazz, you see in marching band music, you see in anything else that exists in rap. Yeah.
And you were right by saying that in the sort of Western music world, there is no way of notating rap.
Yeah. So there's a it has its limits. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can note out the rhythm of someone's voice, but rap is much more than just the rhythm. And I'm not even talking about the lyrics. Aside from the lyrics, there's so much more to the delivery of rap that cannot be notated, because we do use melody. And I'm not talking about traditional 12-tonal melody. I'm talking about just the contours of our voice. If we're rapping up here or rapping down here, how do you notate that? How do you notate the fluctuations? Like, how do you notate that? Because I'm not committing myself to any note, you know what I'm saying? But my tone is obviously fluctuating. How do you address that? Because that's a huge part of what makes something sound effective and what makes something sound ineffective. So there are lots of elements to rap that can't be notated. So in an ironic way, me breaking down rap using these rhythmic devices found in Western music, described by Western music, is to illuminate that this framework is actually inadequate. You know what I'm saying? And whilst I can show that rap is beautiful and intricate using this framework, I can't even come close to describing how amazing it is and how complex it really is. And this framework is not, can't do the job.
Yeah. I guess you would be the right person to figure it out for all of us.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I think you can do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know,
it's probably in the works.
It's another avenue. It's another potential avenue for me. I feel like I have quite a few of those.
Yeah.
But I don't have the bandwidth to go down every single one. So I have to think about which ones to pursue.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Before I let you go, are you quickly able to break down one of your songs for us?
Just quickly.
Just quickly.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll just do a summation of one of them. So the song I've chosen is Don't Stop Regardless, which is the first full track off my album, The Future Was. And that track, broadly speaking, the context for it is like a time traveler from a hypothetical future, let's say the year 3000 or something, where the continent of Africa has been liberated from all its imperial and colonial forces. It is now, it's now economically strong, militaristically, it's secure, and all that kind of wonderful stuff. I guess in pop culture, you can envision something like a Wakanda, but throughout the whole continent. So the time traveler comes from a place like this and is tasked with going back in time and speaking to the children of the diaspora, like us, me and you, speaking to people on the continent, everyone who is out there and who is aware of the issues that our continent and that black people face all over the world and who are trying to do something about it. And that time traveler speaks to them and says, keep going, keep fighting. There are going to be obstacles that come across you. There are going to be things that try and stop you in your path, but don't stop regardless of what happens. That's the message. So the song is written from the perspective of that time traveler. So the opening lines, I'm from a different starshine, a world that exists way different than your kind. Like saying like, you can imagine he arrives on the planet in the spaceship and he comes out and the people all around like looking at him is like, who are you? What are you doing here? And he comes out with these lines. And then he starts talking about, you know, what is the world I'm like? What is the world I'm from like? Ain't nobody groomed to be wedded to hard times, that ain't no mother mourn for they send doing hard times. So it's kind of like he's commenting in a way in what's happening now. Ain't nobody groomed to be wedded to hard times. So it's like our people all around the world, like our black people all around the world, Africans all around the world, they're struggling with something. They're all struggling with something. You know, in America, they're struggling with, you know, the legacy of slavery. And on the continent, they're struggling with corrupt governments, which are the legacy of colonialism. You know, in other parts of the diaspora, you know, racial violence and all this kind of stuff. There's all something we're struggling with. It's like to be African is to be wedded to having a hard life. And so this time traveler is commenting on that essentially by saying in his timeline, in his world, that isn't the case. And he gives a specific example of that. Ain't no mother mourn for their son doing a hard time. So it's like we know that prison populations all around the world are disproportionately housing Africans or you know, indigenous people, more broadly applicable. So this time traveler is saying, actually, in his world, there's no mother like mourning the fact that their son is in prison. You know, their son is spending all this time in prison because, you know, they didn't grow up with the legacy of colonialism, with slavery, and all these kind of things. So the time traveler then goes on to say, to then further describe what the world is like. And it's essentially, it's implied that he's juxtaposing with what our world is like. And it's like saying, this is what your world can be like when it's free. The theme is like, as long as you just keep fighting and you don't stop regardless of what happens, which is what the chorus is, don't stop regardless, you know, we don't stop regardless, then you'll get to where you want to be. So the first verse is kind of like he's setting up the scene. He's like, this is what the world I'm from is like. And then in the second verse, he comes and says, it's more of a direct encouragement to the people. He's saying, there's a line in here that's like, if you can count the cost and unite strongly, we're a manifestation of what life is going to be. So it's like, if you guys can unite, and this is sort of a throw to my sort of Pan-African ideology, which is like black people from around the world needing to unite to be strong. The time traveler is saying, if you guys can do that, then what you're seeing in front of you, me, this time traveler in all my glory, and this world that I've described from you, that can be your world. You know what I'm saying? And then he goes on to say, for me, I do what I want. I don't have to grind. I don't have to work in some office just to make ends meet. I chose a life of being a musician. I chose a life of, you know, sharing my music with the world. So the line is like, we do what we choose. I chose artful release. Call me Pablo the way I sent my bars overseas. So that's like a cheeky little throw to Pablo Escobar, who was exported his drugs overseas. But in this case, he's saying, I exported my bars. Like I'm a rapper and everyone around the world is listening to what I'm saying. And because that's a life I could choose for myself, because I didn't have to labor to survive, you know, in this world that I'm from, everyone just does what they want because everything is provided for, because we've reached this kind of, this state, this utopian, this socialist kind of state where, you know, we can do what we want and just live. So that's the vibe of the song. It's a very powerful sort of commentary on our world, encased in this sort of futuristic sci-fi, way.
Goosebumps. I'm gonna go listen to it again.
Yeah, please do. Please
after that explanation. Oh, this chat has been very, very, very insightful, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. And is there anything else that you want to
just check me out on all the socials? MazBoQ. I'm sure you'll check that out there.
You are listening to The Songwriter's Diary. Special thanks to MazBoQ for sharing his journey today. Please enjoy Don't Stop Regardless by MazBoQ. Peace and love, love and light, Makuka. Hunger for things not offered by reality, movement eventually cease. Every will and every desire succumbs to accept yours. Indeed, it was not your own enemies that brought on your defeat. It was fear. As soon as the baton touched the spread of our palms, we knew what had to be achieved. Nothing that had been unseen, but everything that has not yet been realized. I'm from a different star sign, a world that exists way different than your kind. Ain't nobody groomed to be bred into hard times, and ain't no mother more for their son doing hard time. And we like the hard grind, not for real estate or cream. No, we do it for the living to elevate the teams. Poverty of pigment never reigns supreme. We brought to being where radicals dream that I'm an actual king. I grew up, never questioned the grow up, never spat at reflections. Love us who God sold up. You deserve an Olympic gold, wrestling with an identity that don't fit the mold. We be like, we the Bambinos, the chiefs of tomorrow. And we be like, and we made it this far cause we said we don't stop regardless. But they wanna take us back to yesteryear. We don't stop regardless. They think we got every reason to fail. We don't stop regardless. Don't you know we made it this far cause we said we don't stop regardless. Well, no, we don't stop regardless. Nah, we gon' run it all day. 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 We don't stop regardless. Ha. So weak. If you can count the cost and unite strongly, then we a manifestation of what life gon' be. We do what we choose, I chose awful release. Call me Pablo the way I sent my bars overseas. Exploited a mistake on the part of the beast who underestimated the sons and daughters of queens. Like, we the ones that blood bought, we're who they run from. We be like, and we made it this far cause we said we don't stop regardless. But they wanna take us back to yesteryear. We don't stop regardless. They think we got every reason to fail. We don't stop regardless. Don't you know we made it this far? Cause we said we don't stop regardless.